This is audiobook in MP3 of Colonel from WW2, Philip J. Corso, Dawn of a New Age. Foreword: the opening, 30 years of silence. I was sitting in a large armchair, my three grandchildren were with me, Philip, age 9, Nikki, age 8, and on my lap, Andy, age 6. Philip asked, "Grandad, what did you do during the war?" Then Nicholas said, "Have you ever seen a flying saucer?" And Andy had to get his part in and asked, "Have you ever seen E.T. Grandpa?" I thought I had better leave them a legacy, and so I began to write my memoirs with the foreword. If one passage in these memoirs helps you survive in a troubled world, then all this work is not in vain. Later I added, if one passage in the addendum helps you recognize and survive against an enemy from outer space, then this additional revelation is not in vain. And so began the work, which has continued for over 5 years. Introduction. Dawn of a New Age. Legend has it that centuries past, 4000 BC, the gods or extraterrestrials from another planet came to Earth, created a new, Homo sapiens, then later decided to destroy mankind. After a deluge of destruction, they decided to let humans survive. The goddess Ninus/Ishtar took the lead in ensuring survival of the human race. Millenniums later, the great Chinese general Sun Tzu, who used intelligence to win all his battles, said, if you don't know your enemy or don't know yourself, you will lose every battle. If you know yourself and not your enemy, or know your enemy and not yourself, you will lose half of your battles. But if you know yourself and know your enemy, you don't have to fear the outcome of 1,000 battles. In the case of UFOs or extraterrestrials, we have been led to believe that they don't exist. So, even before we begin to analyze events concerning UFOs and debris, we have lost half of our battle. This is the point in time where we are at present. The other half, whereby we don't know ourselves, cannot be 100% ruled out, since great men have expressed themselves as believers, some of which are General Douglas MacArthur, General George Marshall, Wernher von Braun, President Ronald Reagan, General Nathan Twining, General Walter Bedell Smith, Dr. Carl Gustav Jung, and many others. Because of US government policy, which was and still is that UFOs and debris do not exist, they could not be classified as a threat to our national security. Hostile acts are ignored or explained away, except for the exceptional men named above. In Sun Tzu's words, we stand to lose every battle where this non-existent entity is involved. The situation even spilled over into the realm of research and development. How could a development derive from something that didn't exist? Any hardware was an aberration. Scientists such as Dr. Herman Oberth, Stanton T. Friedman, Robert Sarbaker, W. B. Smith, Dr. Wernher von Braun, etc., are disregarded or ridiculed when they say, we cannot take the credit for our record advancements in certain scientific fields alone, we have been helped by people of other worlds. So intense was the cover-up that it outrivaled the KGB disinformation activities in political matters. The perpetrators also used the Soviet technique of creating an obnoxious label, such as the McCarthyism label, and pinning this on all opponents. In this case, it was the label of cook to be used against all who believed that UFOs and debris were real. These activities might eventually prove to be dangerous, catastrophic, and certainly stupid. However, it was appropriate for the political climate of the era. In 1958, the liberal elements in the US policy apparatus strongly recommended civilian control of all space activities. As such, the Department of Defense quickly killed Project Horizon, a military colony on the moon. This army project used some of the best minds in the nation and was far ahead of its time. It was the forerunner of NASA's moon landing. NASA came into existence in 1958, and it was totally civilian control and ensured peaceful uses of space exploration. They could not believe that an enemy could have other thoughts or not fit into our thinking or planning. Atomic energy was taken from the US Army and given to the Atomic Energy Commission. Again, civilian control of the only weapon the Ebbies would fear. from the period 1947 to 1958, military R&D was greatly disorganized. Much pro and con maneuvering took place during this period. To ensure civilian control, Department of Defense organized ARPA, Advanced Research Project Agency. There were continuous clashes between ARPA and the military services, especially Army R&D. Finally, in I-960, all U.S. Army R&D was pulled under one department, Office of the Chief of the Army R&D, all personnel, the tech services, laboratories and installations and budget were concentrated under a genera. The Golden Age of R&D, 1958 to 1963, blossomed. R&D means research and development. However, Army R&D had to work within the framework of civilian control of space efforts, opposition of Department of Defense, adverse policy guidance, and the animosity of CIA Department of State. As a result, R&D data, stemming from areas out of this world, had to be carefully hidden and the information kept among a select few. Great efforts were made to bring large industry and select laboratories into the Army R&D fold. Although our government debunked such events as the Roswell UFO crash, the Soviets, namely Joseph Stalin, took it serious, and he called in his top scientist to follow the sensational news, and alert their espionage agencies to gather any information on the incident. Another important phase was German scientific developments. Army R&D organized Operation Paperclip and brought over von Braun and his group. Many German scientific documents, even flying saucer successes of the Germans, were gathered and brought to the United States. Since we knew the inner workings of our government, both Congress and the executive branch, and the thinking of the people in the policy-making positions, we were able to move ahead in our mission without obstruction. To this day, nothing is known how the developments came about for many startling discoveries which are beginning to bear fruit. Soviet secrets, German advances and out-of-this-world technology was a perfect mix to camouflage any operation. Now that our base of operation was firm and strong, we decided to marshal a preponderance of strength against which even the civilian control and left-leaning politicians could not prevail. The partners that we sought and gathered were U.S. industry, a strong laboratory support, and many leading universities. The top 25 industries on the Fortune 500 list were contacted and meetings were arranged with their board of directors, top personnel, with the Chief of Army Research and Development. Our laboratories were organized and strengthened, whereby they were furnished ample funds to hire top talent. In addition, many foreign firms and scientists were brought into the fold. Industry's response was outstanding. Proposals submitted were well presented, thorough and along the lines which we wanted. Our laboratories began to function with the well-rounded professionals. Even the highly respected Bell Laboratory was brought into the fold. Universities played an important role. This powerful array was unbeatable. They were the world's best and trusted our approach and guidance. And so began an array of developments such as the world had never seen. Our guiding force was national security and preservation of our way of life. Among the most outstanding were Conquest of Darkness, Image Intensifiers. They were called Night Viewing Devices or Army Night Vision, the Night Vision Laboratory at FT Belvoir, Virginia, was organized. German infrared technology was made available to them, as well as cascade image tubes, electronic multipliers, microchannel plates, and etched fiber optics. Information gathered at the Roswell crash was fed into the system. 48 U.S. industries participated in the development. The Night Viewing Lab, NVL, could never have been as successful without their contribution. Fiber optics. At the Roswell crash, what was thought to be broken wiring harnesses was found. But it was noted that each of the broken ends emitted a different color. There was no wiring in the saucer. The color emitting was from a type of fiber optics. Bell Labs was in the forefront, and from this came the greatest advancement in communication that the world has ever seen. Supertenacity fibers. In the 1960s, we began to look for fibers for flak jackets, parachutes and other military items. We had found a single strand of fiber that the sharpest razor could not cut, and it could not be broken. We got interested and began to study spider silks, with the goal of constructing super tenacity fibers. The spider silks starts as a soluble protein in one of the spider's abdominal glands. As it extruded, it passes through a tubular duct on its way to the spinnerets. This narrow tube forces all the protein molecules to align in the same direction, turning it into a solid, rod-like quasi-crystalline thread. A single strand would have to be nearly 50 miles long before breaking under its own weight, and a thread of dangling silk stretching around the world would weigh 15 ounces. Monsanto is trying to mass produce a spider silk protein from a gene cloned by US Army researchers. The University of Wyoming and Dow Corning are continuing to learn how to clone it. Cross-stitched fibers made possible stealth technology, and thousands of civilian aircraft are almost totally of composite manufacture. Metals, molecular alignment. Reports from our laboratories on a piece of metal from Roswell showed the molecules, atoms had been aligned. This alignment created an incredible hardness, whereby it could not be scratched, bent, dented, and repelled cosmic action and radiance, although it was paper thin. Since CRD thought this discovery could be bigger than Los Alamos, a special team was organized to investigate all possibilities. We found many precious gems and crystals had similar properties. A different alignment would allow radiation to pass through or make the element transparent. Up until 1963 or even 1993, we have not been able to solve this problem. It would make possible space vehicles of great strength, but light is a feather. Fluid simplification. This control of streams by other streams eliminated the need for mechanical moving parts. Some of our universities, industrial laboratories, and our 7 government laboratories provided the basic development foundation. In October 1963, a fluid amplification symposium was held at Harry Diamond Laboratories. 34 papers were prepared and presented by 6 universities. In the audience were representatives of 150 companies and universities. It was believed that this technology was involved in the guidance and propulsion of UFOs. The heart pump came into being because of this technology. Transistors and integrated circuits. We had in our possession a transistor with hair-like wires and leads, and a chip in a stack of thin, uniformly shaped wafer-like components. In electronics, a wafer is a thin slice of semiconductor, such as a crystalline silicon, CC, used for the fabrication of integrated circuits and, in photographic, these formed complete electrical circuits, and developed into the micromodule concept. CRD said it would take 50 years to develop the transistor and 200 years to develop the chip. It came in a short span of 5 years. Dr. Herman Oberth said, "We have been helped by people from outer space. The applied engineering made possible to achieve ruggedness, greater reliability, increased operating speed, and designs which take advantage of automatic production methods. This led to today's supercomputers." Progressively, in 1959 miniaturization of circuits began, in 1960 sub-miniaturization, in 1961, advanced circuitry techniques and micro-miniaturization, and in 1962 micro-modules. HARP. During the period we began what was called a high-altitude research project. We worked closely with the Canadians. They showed us how an electronic device, encapsulated, could be fired at very high velocity into a concrete wall, several thousand Gs, and still come cut and be operative. We could fire a conventional gun into space. One naval 16-inch gun was welded in prolongation to another naval 16-inch gun. It fired vertically into space, and with the appropriate encapsulated electronic devices on the projectile, put it in orbit in space. Many useful gains could have come from this: front peaceful orbits of communication satellites, to spy satellites, and ion-emitting electronic devices which could destroy other electronic devices. There was much resistance to this approach, and the gains were negated by NASA, DARPA, and policy overrides of civilian control. This relatively simple approach was not supported, and the ensuing cost was in the billions to put electronic devices into orbit by sophisticated, expensive means. PSYCHO Chemicals. There has been much written on abductions whereby the abductee loses all track of time. This was no great advancement on the part of extraterrestrials. We perfected psychochemical gases and drugs in the early 1960s. The label was a painless way to win the war. There was a movie made, whereby a cat, after being administered some of these non-lethal drugs, jumps all over the cage to get away from a mouse. Tests on men also showed where soldiers literally fell apart at drill. A brigadier general was given a 4% dose in a cup of coffee, and at a briefing he forgot what he came to report on. We were told to halt all such experiments, but some chemicals and drugs were permitted to remain in our inventory. In addition, a political decision was made to do away with biological weapons experiments. To an extent we obeyed. Lasers. Some help and a technical basis came from Roswell on light amplification through simulated emission of radiation. Beginning in 1958, a surge of activity began since the prediction of laser feasibility. Practical application of the principle of laser feasibility included communication, surveillance, illumination, power transmission, data processing, guidance control, and medical uses. We felt this was the EBE's method of communication over vast distances in space. In later years they applied laser surgery in the mutilation of animals. So advanced was their technique that they did not cut through tissue cells. Cataract removal and surgical methods were our contribution. Eye surgery was made possible, that is, torn retinas, growth of blood vessels in eyes, and glaucoma. Also, it made possible tumors, removal of large benign growths, ear surgery, throat surgery, prostate surgery, urinary stents removal, heart surgery, migraine headache treatment, remove stains from skin, and even hair transplants. Purpose of R&D. The purpose of our activities were to guarantee a superior competitive position for our army. Given the superior data by the accidental event at Roswell, we reduced scientific data to a definite development to fulfill a military requirement. We never quibbled over who discovered or invented a development. The feeling was, if a discovery was adapted to a concrete development, we would all be ahead in the game and the nation would benefit. It must be kept in mind that the extraterrestrials never gave us a thing. Not one scientific development or lead ever came voluntarily from them. We didn't expect any more than was garnered by accident. We were fortunate that 1958 to 1963 was an era of awakening. The leadership, talent and funds were available to take advantage of what we found in order to proceed into a new scientific age. Results were image intensifiers, fiber optics communication, super tenacity fibers, lasers, metals molecular alignment, titanium, fluid amplification, integrated circuits, miniaturization, subminiaturization, microminiaturization, advanced circuitry, 1961, micromodules, 1962, HAPE encapsulation, 1952, psychochemicals, 1961, Project Horizon, 1960, portable atomic generators, ion propulsion, 1960, irradiated food, 1960, control guidance by brain waves, fly-by-wire, 1961, anti-missile missile, Star Wars, 1962, genetics, biological studies, 1960, man's ability travel and fight in space, 1960, rocket propulsion, electromagnetic and atomic, 1961. ICBMs, remote brainwave control, 1961. Depleted uranium and atomic projectiles, 1961. Hostile or warlike acts. The EBEs, with impunity, have performed many acts of war in which they utilized advanced equipment and superior techniques. For an enemy that doesn't exist, they have been extremely active. during the 1950s and 1960s, our policymakers had the same attitude against the communist. They didn't exist as an enemy. This was known as the fig leaf policy. The same can be said of national policy on UFOs. Although the Soviets threatened our existence, they were not considered as enemies. The same attitude prevailed toward UFOs in face of the following acts and activities. The expression fig leaf is widely used figuratively to convey the covering up of an act or an object that is embarrassing or distasteful with something of innocuous appearance, a metaphorical reference to the biblical book of Genesis, in which Adam and Eve used fig leaves to cover their nudity. Reconnaissance of our installations, tampering with Earth's environment and food supplies, abducting humans at will and taking fluid and tissue samples, mutilations of cattle and other animals, spying on our atomic installations, hindering missile and space equipment testing, hampering our military deterrent and nuclear deterrent, halting and interfering with exploration of Moon and Mars, causing crashes of aircraft and casualties among military personnel, and tampering with human and animal genetics. In view of the above, we must ask, will they fight a war as we do, or will they attack in a more insidious manner on a different level? Folklore and history going back to the great civilizations of the Sumerians tell us that the Ebis were most advanced in the studies and manipulations of DNAs. They were adroit in cloning. We believed that the beings of the Boswell crash were clones. The Sumerians called them Igigis. They were used to ferry the gods to Earth and continuously stayed in subspace and circled the globe Earth. Abductions of humans and animal mutations of tissue else to that of humans were taken by the Igigis. Our supercomputers allowed us to find the AIDS virus. It was discovered to be a living entity in itself and attached itself to human cells. The mutilations reached their height in the mid-1970s. They registered in the thousands. The AIDS scourge appeared in 1981. They once threatened to wipe out mankind. Is this their new insidious approach? A serious food for thought. Just in case, Star Wars. We needed an advance base on the moon, but this project was cancelled on us by the Department of Defense. But, since the security of the nation was uppermost, we continued our guest studies on strengthening all parts of the human body, muscles, bone, brain, etc., so man could travel, or fight, in space continued. All phases of atomic energy proceed at fast pace for heat, power, propulsion, freshwater production as well as weapons of destruction continued. We had an atomic bomb the size of a football, a 280mm artillery shell, and huge megaton bombs. Portable nuclear power plants, a plant 6x6x6 for which could be put in the ground and function for 20 years unattended. Nuclear propulsion systems, irradiates foods and nuclear disposable of waste, applications to medical needs, and disposal of human excrement and sludge, and even how the human could restructure and sustain itself without food. Another important project was the use of brain waves for guidance and bodily cures. In the destructive area, laser was a weapon that could blind in a split-second flash. The most frightening and destructive was, DEW, directed energy weapons. A technological revolution was taking place in military weaponry. These directed energy technologies included lasers, radio frequency weapons, high-powered microwave and particle beams. The Igigis must know that a DEW weapon is transmitted to the target at 300,000 km per second or zero flight time. Problems of trajectory and lead are eliminated. Targets become thermally overloaded, causing their radiated surface to weaken and melt. The energy enters the UFO and explodes from within. The energy can surround the target with an intense radiation field that can induce lethal voltages and currents into electrical systems. In space applications, exoatmospheric a particle beam propagates well, in it needs considerable help. A version of DEW could be a DNA bomb which could release intense electromagnetic action and could be designed to alter or seriously affect genetic codes. This is a frightening thought which the Igigis must know. On the surface we may appear puny and inadequate in the face of UFO technology, but just perhaps, this is not the case. We never proceeded on the premise that this enemy never existed and so Star Wars was born. The Soviet connection. Gorbachev assured President Reagan that if an attack came from outer space, they would join us to counter the threat. The Russians have information on UFOs which they are still treating as top secret. This information is in the files of the KGB and GRU. They lost Phobos 2 years before we lost Observer in August 1963. They wanted to hit the Mars moon Phobos with laser beams, but we objected and stopped them. There have been Roswell-type incidents in Russia and they have gathered and analyzed many items which originated with UFOs against their people and installations. These incidents and outer space events have been of great interest to their scientific community. They outperformed and outspent us in many space efforts and we should probe them to see if they had a golden age of R&D which could match ours and also was kept secret. See zero inclusion. Although the heart of this story appears to be the story of the Army R&D effort and accomplishments during the period 1958 to 1963, the real story is the people that made it happen. They came from all walks of life, were honed in battles, in the desert, on the mountains, in the rice paddies, the jungle and in the air and on the sea. They got to know themselves and assured victory in half of their battles. They learned to know the enemy well and were victorious in 1,000 battles and won the war. They brought back a fierce patriotism and love of country. Their grateful country entrusted them with its deepest secrets and they entered the highest levels of government. They learned the system and recognized their opponents. Again they won 1,000 battles, as they had against the enemy from without. Another dangerous enemy recognized by his actions, lurked over the horizon and so the battle preparations began. Eventually and without fanfare these Americans retired from the scene and took on a far greater task, to educate their children and grandchildren on how to improve, take and hold the world. They had saved for them and that even an enemy from outer space could not prevail. The beginning. On February 23, 1942, I was inducted into the U.S. Army as a recruit. 250 of us left on a train from a small town in western Pennsylvania, California, Pennsylvania, and were sent to the induction center at Indian Town Gap, pictures above. There I was separated from my friends because I had made the top grader in an IQ test. I was sent to Edgewood Arsenal, where I took basic training, and again was separated from my newfound friends and kept on the corridor again, because of the test. This established a pattern for the future, whereby many assignments were caused by IQ. Data on my record, this followed me through officer candidate school and even with British MI-19, in England. Much happened in the ensuing 25 years, England, North Africa, Italy, Germany, Korea, Vietnam. It was my great and good fortune to be thrown in with and become close to many great merits of the era. Often I was amazed at meeting and being able to listen to and learn from giants of great wisdom and intellect. Because of this, I was able to analyze and put into proper perspective great events of the 20th century, among which was the perplexing and mysterious problem of UFOs and extraterrestrial beings and how they could affect our lives and world. 1942 USMC Marine Officers Training at Indian Town Gap. Evolution from crude computers to the chip. At officer school in 1942 we had to learn the air defense problem. Toward the end of the course, before receiving our commissions, we had to take an examination. It was a 3-hour ordeal. The first hour was general artillery and air defense questions. The second hour was mathematics, and the third solving the air defense problem. I breezed through the first hour in record time. The second hour I finished all the math problems in half the time. The instructor, a captain, would wander through the class and would assist students having problems. He saw me sitting and not working. He came over and said, "Having trouble, soldier?" He was surprised at my answer when I said, "No, sir, I am finished." He said, "It would not hurt to go over the questions. Maybe I shouldn't have said what I did, But being young and naive, I said, "I don't have to, sir," I answered them all. He took my paper and placed his answer template over my answers. His puzzled look explained his thoughts. I knew they were all correct.